And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We're kicking off our series today, talking with candidates who are vying to represent us Iowans in Washington. The upcoming midterm elections are unusual in that Iowa has three open seats being contested. Of course, the big U.S. Senate seat, receiving much national attention, left open by retiring Democrat Tom Harkin. But also in the U.S. House, Iowa's first district in the northeast part of the state is an open seat. And the third district, which includes the Des Moines area, Des Moines, West Des Moines, also over to Council Bluffs, to the western part of our western border, the southwestern corner of the state, more or less, including the Des Moines area. In that race, Democrat nominee Stacey Apple will face David Young, the Republican nominee, former chief of staff to U.S. Senator Charles Grassley, a native of Van Meter, who captured the Iowa GOP nomination on June 3rd in that convention in a field of six GOP candidates. He joins us now. David Young, welcome to the program.
Ben, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for the offer, and it's great to talk to your listeners.
We are reaching out to our listeners this half hour to ask for questions for David Young. What do you want to find out about his positions on issues of importance to you? You can email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org, tweet us at IPR Talk, find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook, leave a comment or question, or dial toll-free 1-866-780-9100. And we'll get to those listener questions in just a moment, David. But first, tell us, what are the key policy differences between you and your opponent, Stacey Apple?
Well, I'm running on what I have seen as three deficits within our government. That's the budget deficit, you know, $18 trillion of debt we're almost at, the jobs deficit with the economy, and just the general trust deficit, you know, the misguided policies of our federal government, some being very nefarious and behind closed doors. I want to help to restore trust and accountability in our federal government.
Mm-hmm. How do you do that, though, specifically? This is what every politician, especially new ones, like to play the Washington outsider and say, I'm going to fix it. And I don't mean to be snarky here, but we do need some specifics. How do you go about it?
Well, sure. And it's a good question. And the proposition is that there's more than what a congressman can do than just vote and offer constituent service. There are tools that our founding fathers gave members of Congress, the tools of oversight and investigations to watch this government, because this government's big. And it does watch us, and it's time that, you know, this government started working for us. There are many
tools. Do you mean by this government, excuse me, this administration, or are you talking about the government including Congress, or are you saying this administration needs to be supervised and investigated?
I think any administration is getting too big, and we've seen it in the past. You know, I'm an equal opportunity watchdog here, whether it be, you know, I can remember one of the first investigations, just watching the news as a kid, that of Senator Grassley's, when he looked at the Defense Department. And, you know, we realized that they were selling hammers and toilet seats for hundreds and if not thousands of dollars. And some of that transparency, we need to keep that going. And these are the tools that every member of Congress, Ben, can use. And I know how to use them, and I will use them regardless of who's in power.
David Young is with us. He is vying for the third congressional district seat to represent us in Iowa. And Des Moines is in that congressional district. And Bob is in Des Moines. Bob has a question. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Thank you for joining us. What's your question?
In March, you mentioned that you thought the minimum wage was more hurtful than helpful. Can you give me some examples or explain what you mean by that?
Sure. You know, like you and like every other Iowan, I want to see Iowans put more money in their pockets. I think we need to be very careful with the minimum wage in this sense that it can really hamper some small business owners and what they're trying to do, and even the people that they employ. Small business owners may have to make the decision of maybe cutting back hours if the wage gets too high for them to take care of. So, you know, when I look at this issue, you know, I'm open to a raising of the minimum wage in the way that it's been done in the past, in a bipartisan effort where there is also some small business tax relief. And I think that has been the way that it has worked. And I think these have to be bipartisan solutions. So I am open to it. But we have to just remember that, you know, 70% of the American workforce out there is employed by small businesses. And we need to keep those small businesses going. They are the engine of our economy. But that's a good question. Thank you, Bob.
What about the refrain that no one working full time say, two people in a family working full-time, that family should not live in poverty. What about that refrain?
Well, you know, I don't want to see anyone live in poverty, obviously. And, you know, there's some ways that we can get at that also with the tax code, I think. I want to see taxes lowered on our families. I want to keep those taxes low, and not only just for businesses so they can expand, but also for workers who can have more buying power for their buck. And we need to keep the earned income tax credit in place. We also need to keep that small bracket, the lowest bracket, 10% in place. And we need to keep our economy going and grow our economy, and so we can have some better jobs out there. We're doing pretty good in Iowa, as you know, Ben. And I tell folks, you know, you can thank all the legislation out there or leaders who are trying to do this to make a better environment out there. But if you just – Iowans look in the mirror, and that's why the economy is doing so well in Iowa. We just know how to work, and it's in our DNA to do that.
David Young is with us this half hour, 1-866-780-9100. Also in Des Moines, Sophia. Thank you, Bob, by the way. Let's move to Sophia. Hi. Is it Sophia or Sophia? Sophie.
Hello?
Hello. Did I get your name right? Sophia?
No, it's Sophia.
Okay. Welcome to our program, Sophia.
Thank you for having me. Hi, Mr. Young. I just wanted to ask you a quick question. You know, given just today's, I guess, climate in Congress, and as we celebrate 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act, the passage of that, just wanted to find out, and also kind of with given the deficiencies that the modern GOP has in attracting diverse voters, women and people of color. You know that, you know, obviously back in 64, that the GOP overwhelmingly voted in the House for the Civil Rights Act. Would you work with Republicans and Democrats to reauthorize and reformulate the current Voting Rights Act?
You know, I will sit down with anybody who is an honest broker out there and who doesn't want to be involved in a debate just for partisan reasons to see things shot down and stopped. You know, I have, from my experience, if you want to get something done, you have to step on over to the other side, because many of our solutions, as you know, are going to be bipartisan solutions. They're not going to be partisan, and we have to work across the aisle. Doesn't mean you have to compromise your beliefs, but you can cooperate, and sometimes you will have to walk away from the table. But I want to make sure that everybody has, you know, equal access to the voting booth and that there's no discrimination at all.
Sophia, did that get to the heart of your question?
Not really. I just wanted to know, Mr. Young, if he'd be willing to work with, you know, obviously, basically the main thing is, would he be willing to reformulate that Voting Rights Act, which is needed?
I would. I'd be at the table.
Sophia, thank you for your call from Des Moines. Let's go to Derek in West Des Moines. Hi, Derek.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, Derek. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
With David Young.
I love listening to River to River. I'm glad to get through. Mr. Young, I've been listening to you, and, you know, I'm kind of impressed, but I've been listening to a lot of the debate on the immigration about those children at the border, and it makes me concerned about the overall immigration debate we're having right now. What are some of the big things you think that you can get done, or at least ideas that you can bring to the table in order to change our immigration system right now?
Well, first of all, we do need to secure the border. And that's a bipartisan issue here. We have folks on both sides of the aisle realizing that we just need to secure our border. We are a nation of laws. And when it comes to that, you know, in the Senate bill that passed, it gave certification of the border being secure to the Department of Homeland Security. And I don't like that. I don't want to give that much power just to one person to do a checkoff and say, hey, it's secure. I want members of Congress to have some skin in the game on this. And I'm sure that it will be secure once they are able to certify it, because they're going to have skin in the game and they don't want to get that one wrong for fear of getting voting out of office, number one, which shouldn't be the fear of any member of Congress. The quest here is just to do what's right. And so that's an issue for me when it comes to securing the border.
Let's talk about the other side of the equation there that I'm sure Derek wants to get at too. Describe the type of immigration reform you would support. What elements would you support, not support? Would you support a path to citizenship for the millions of undocumented workers in this country currently?
Well, you know, I'd like to go back to what we did in the 50s and 60s, a program called the Bracero Program. It was a guest worker program where folks could go across the border in and out of the country and with legal status and perform work where work was needed. If there is a path to citizenship, I think those who have broken our laws, it should be a checklist of many different things, and I think they should get at the back of the line because right now, if you look at our legal immigration system, we have a lot of folks waiting at the front of the line who came in here the right way, and we need to pay attention to them first, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we do have a crisis down there on the border, Ben, and, you know, we have to put a human face on this. We are the greatest country in the world, and there's a reason why people are coming here, and they're coming here for a better life. And we must not demonize people's yearning for wanting to do better for themselves and their children. But we have a crisis here. It's turned into a humanitarian crisis, it seems. And we've heard both Republicans and Democrats and independents and talk about that. And I believe as early as today or maybe it was yesterday, they have already, you know, taken some of these children back to their homes in Central America. And I think we need to reunify them with their families.
David Young, you're a former chief of staff to U.S. Senator Charles Grassley. How many years in that position?
I was his chief of staff, serving Iowans for 7 years there. It was a great job, a pleasure every day to do so.
How did that job prepare you for what you hope to be your next job as a U.S. congressman?
Well, you know, there are three things that I learned really from Senator Grassley, and how to listen. You know, I'm talking to you right now, but I love taking questions. I love being out on the road. And I love talking to Iowans and listening to them. I'm oftentimes asking more questions than they are because I want to know what Iowans are thinking because I can be no better advocate in the U.S. Congress if elected than if I, you know, if I don't know what Iowans are talking about, then I'm not going to be very effective.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you have to remember who your boss is. Iowans are my boss. And you saw what happens when people forget that. Look recently at what happened with Eric Cantor in his primary in Virginia. I think maybe he forgot who his boss was. Iowans are my boss. They have the ability to hire and fire. And also, you can keep your integrity, and you don't have to lose your soul in Washington by getting something done.
Laura from Audubon asks, in the last 20 years, have you lived longer in Iowa or in Washington, D.C.?
Well, unfortunately, Washington, D.C., I wish the U.S. Capitol was here in Iowa. We'd be able to invoke a lot more.
It would be in the center of the nation. That would make sense, wouldn't it?
It would make sense here in the heartland, and there'd be a lot more common sense there. But if you want to make a difference, you know, at the federal level for your state, you're going to have to, unfortunately, move out there.
Working 7 years for Senator Grassley, living in the majority of the last 20 years in Washington, I guess this makes you a Washington insider.
Well, I've got some good insights into the swamp, as they say. But, you know, I've always kept an outside Iowa perspective. And I found out, you know, Iowans, wherever they go and wherever I meet them, there's that Iowa nice. There's that Iowa compassion and Iowa hard work ethic. And, you know, standing next to Senator Grassley shoulder to shoulder, we did some good things. And I want to continue to do that for Iowa.
Now, we've even had a former Iowa governor heading to the agriculture department, heading it. But farmers were still kept in limbo over for years over new farm policies. The farm bill was supposed to be renewed in 2012. It wasn't signed until a lot longer after that. How will you represent the interests of agriculture in rural communities in Iowa, in your district, the third?
Well, I'd like to get in front of the EPA and explain to them that not all farms are the same. And the flyover country that they fly over, there's very diverse farms, different farming methods. And that their policies really can affect not just farmers, but the economy in general. And we've seen the EPA try to do things like regulate dust. And, you know, you can't control the wind, Ben, you know that. And right now they're talking about, you know, methane from cows and regulating that. And they want to redefine the term water under the Clean Water Act, which could really have a far-reaching effect, not just on farms, but other kinds of development. And I just want to bring some common sense and perspective to the EPA. And also I want to make sure that some of these issues, that they're debated within Congress and not just with rules and regulations, because we send representatives and senators to Washington for a reason, and that's to do the nation's business. And they should have a seat at the table, of course.
Morgan on our Facebook page asks for your thoughts on how money influences our legislators. Would you support legislation, Morgan asks, that makes political donations more transparent and limits lobbyist donations?
I'm all about transparency in terms of the kind of oversight and investigations I want to do with this government. And also, when it comes to campaigns as well. I think there should be an ability to make – there is an undercurrent law already. Contributions need to be made transparent. Now, sometimes they're made just at the end of a quarter. I think there's ways to make those transparent even sooner with all the technology that's out there. But, you know, I have standards when it comes to fundraising. You know, it takes money to get the message out. And I solicit legally, accept legally. And I always tell folks that there's no quid pro quo.
In Des Moines, we have – is it Louis joining us? Hi, Louis.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing. Not much time, but please shoot out your question or comment.
Great. So I was just very concerned about the government shutdown last year, and I wanted to ask you, Mr. Young, what you thought about that, if you would have been willing to shut down the government in the same situation, and if you see any issues on the horizon where you feel like it would be worth it for you to threaten the government shutdown to try to spur the action that you're looking for.
Well, you know, the government shutdown and the raising of the debt ceiling, issues like that, it's symbolic of the dysfunction that is in Washington. You know, the shutdown would not have happened if Congress would have gotten their appropriations bills done on time in that sense. I'm not a fan of government shutdowns, and I'm not going to be banging my fists on the House floor to do so. Many times it's really disruptive of government, and it costs more in the end. And I'm somebody who is a fiscal conservative, and I want to make sure that we rein in spending, and a government shutdown actually costs more money.
Mm-hmm. You say you're tried and true in your conservative thought. There are many shades of conservative. Define yourself more specifically in the conservative part of the political spectrum.
You know, Iowans hate debt. You probably don't like debt, Ben, and neither do many of your callers. Iowans just pride themselves on shying away from debt. And so fiscal conservative, I want to make sure that we have those policies in place within our budgeting where we get away from some of the budgeting practices that we have right now, like baseline budgeting, where we just – you know, the Congress just gives the same amount of money, if not more, to agencies and departments as they did the year before. And many times there's not a lot of justification for it and transparency in what they're giving to. And so I want to move to more zero-based budgeting, which is what a lot of states are doing, municipalities. And that is pretty much you have agencies and departments come before Congress and you assume they start at zero and you make them almost beg, Ben, for the money they need and what they need it for. I'd like to see legislation sunset. You know, they pass laws and it goes on forever, as you know. Why not sunset legislation after 5 years and see what kind of effect it had on our economy, what its intention was, or even our liberties?
David Young, you mentioned the EPA in relation to farming a few minutes ago. According to figures from NASA, 97% of climate scientists agree that climate warming trends over the past century are very likely due to human activities. Most of the leading scientific organizations worldwide have issued public statements endorsing this position. Do you believe in this science?
Well, I believe that the climate is changing, and I don't know what the effect is from, for instance, but I'll tell you what.
You won't agree with 97% that say it's due to human activities.
I'm sure that humanity does have a certain effect on this, but the question is how much? And the other question is, when decisions are made on this issue, Ben, is it going to be from the EPA alone with a rule or guideline or that kind of thing? Or should Congress once again be at the table? Because, you know, cap and trade, these kind of issues, I think they should be done at the congressional level, and we should have a real serious debate within Congress on these things.
If you're part of Congress, you're saying Congress should act. Should Congress act against climate change?
Well, the ball should be in Congress's court and not in the EPA's court on this. I think it's inevitable that we're going to...
Should Congress act, I guess, is the question. Not just if it's in their court. Should they do something with the ball in that court?
I think it's inevitable, and they probably should.
Okay. Nick is with us in Council Bluffs. Have to make it quick, Nick.
Well, hi. I was just wondering, you know, one of my biggest concerns is the federal budget. And I was just wondering, David, you know, what do you plan on doing to fix the budget, you know, specifically?
Well, I talked about just a second ago about some of the principles I have when it comes to budgeting, getting away from baseline and moving to zero based. You know, people talk about auditing the Federal Reserve. I'd like to audit just about every part of the government, if not all every part of the government, because there's so much waste, fraud, abuse, and mismanagement. And only then can we really uncover what's going on in our government to maybe to rein in a lot of these programs, or maybe even cut some programs that may have outlived their usefulness.
Just under 4 months before the election in November, David Young, have you set up debates with your opponent, Stacey Apple? Are you pursuing that?
We are. You bet. I believe there's an Iowa Public Television debate in September, and KCCI is doing one. And I am somebody who, you know, having been in the primary, we did a lot of forums and debates, and it's part of the process, and I enjoy it. And I'll do as many as I can.
Mm-hmm. Remind us how you won that, because you did not come out on top in the June 3rd primary, but you won in convention. How did that happen?
You bet. As you know, Ben, we had six people in that race, and the primary was on June 3rd, and I received, I got fifth place in that. In those top five, we were all within single digits from one another, and it was a pretty tight, compact group there. And so it went to convention, where there were 513 delegates. That convention was on June 21st, so we all kind of started on the ground zero, on the level playing field, and we just made a commitment to go out and touch every delegate three different ways, whether or not it's knocking on their door, a letter, a surrogate, a phone call, an email, and also just that if you couldn't be their first pick, ask to be their second. Yeah. And as other candidates dropped out, folks went my way, and we just worked hard, and we were nice. And sometimes that's what it takes.
Well, it's nice of you.
And I'm honored.
Nice of you to join us, David Young, this half hour to talk about your vision as a candidate, Republican nominee for the 3rd District U.S. House race. Thank you, David Young.
Ben, thank you so much. And to your listeners, thank you.
River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkis. Join us tomorrow. More politics. Politics Day tomorrow. Jim McCormick of Iowa State University, Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa will pick apart recent politics with their analysis. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.